Okay, so in this session, we're going to start setting up Bash on Windows 10. Just to be clear, this is again not something that's running in a virtual machine. This is native Ubuntu binaries running directly on top of Windows 10. Microsoft partnered with Canonical to make this possible. So in order to get started, first off, you have to make sure that you're using Windows 10 and the anniversary update. Then we're going to go into our settings. We're going to go to Update and Security, and we're going to have to enable developer mode. This is considered a developmental feature. So we're going to go ahead and enable this, agree. It's going to have to download the developer mode package and install. It should only take less than 2 minutes. Great. Now, after this completes, we're going to go ahead and go to Control Panel. And we're going to add it as we would any other feature. Programs, Programs and Features. We're going to go to Turn Windows Features On or Off. We're going to scroll down to the bottom. And we're going to see this new box, Windows Subsystem for Linux. This is our bash shell. And to be clear, this isn't just a bash shell. This is bash on Ubuntu on Windows. So this is more than a shell. We have additional Linux tools, as we'll check out later on in the demo. So we're going to go ahead and check this box, press OK. It's going to go ahead and search for required files and download those. After this finishes and it finishes applying changes, we're actually going to go ahead and restart the computer. Okay, now that this finished restarting, I'm logging back into it. Again, Bash is not running in a virtual machine or in Hyper-V, but I am running this demo system. This is a completely clean image of Windows 10 anniversary update. I am running that using Hyper-V in a virtual machine, just so I can show you from scratch how to get this set up and configured and some cool things we can do with it as well. So now that the system is restarted and I've enabled the developer mode, and I've also turned the feature on, now I have to actually set up my bash instance. So I can do that by typing cmd to enter into my command prompt. Once that enters, I'm going to go ahead and type the word bash. It's going to then ask me, do I want to install Ubuntu on Windows? This is distributed by Canonical and licensed under those particular terms available at the link on the screen. I'm going to go ahead and press Y to agree and continue. It's going to download the necessary files from the Windows Store. This is free. You don't have to enter anything in the Windows Store. I don't even have a Microsoft account added on this computer, so I don't even have an account in the Windows Store, but it's able to go and get those files. After it finishes downloading the files and unpacking them, I'm going to need to create a Unix username and a Unix password. This is going to be different than my Windows username and my Windows password. It's a subsystem running on top of Windows. So as a result, it has a completely different user account and it's self-contained. Okay, so this finished installing, and now I'm prompted with the option to enter my new Unix username. So I'm going to go ahead and type bash demo, press enter. And I'm going to go ahead and type a super secret password. I'm going to retype it. Great. So that went ahead and created a new Unix username and set a new Unix password. I did not have to do anything for that. And I'm now available, or I'm now in my bash subsystem. So I can start typing things like ls and start seeing documents that are available. That's great. But if I notice, I'm actually in a mounted folder of my C drive, of my Windows folder users, and my Windows user account. I want to be in just my Linux system. Since the Windows subsystem for Linux, or Bash on Ubuntu on Windows, is separate from Windows, and is Ubuntu running on top of Windows, it has its own home folder. So if I were to change directory to my home folder into a PWD file, I now have just a home and bash demo. And if I do an LS there, I actually don't see anything. If I do an LS-LA so I can see some hidden files, I see just the basic hidden files. So this is also pretty neat, but what else can I do with it? How much of Bash and Linux is this really? So let's go ahead and try to run sudo apt-get update, type my super secret password. You know, it might be helpful if I actually typed the word update properly. We see that this is working. This is updating the package list, and that's great. And we also see that it's using Trusty. I'll go ahead and check the version of Ubuntu in a second. Before I check the version, let's go ahead and just do an upgrade package and see if that works. That works. And so I see that I actually have a few packages I can go ahead and upgrade, including Python. So I see that OpenSSL is already installed on the system, and Python's installed on the system. This is really great. So I'm going to go ahead and press Y to agree to update those packages. Press Enter. And if you notice the directory, it's going out and getting directories from Ubuntu's direct servers. This isn't something it's pulling from Microsoft. Again, this is something that is distributed by Canonical for Microsoft. So as soon as this finishes, I'll go ahead and check the version. This is version 14.04, but I want to just be able to show viewers at home that on a screen. And then we'll go ahead and see some basic tools. We'll go ahead and play around with Vim. We'll see touch. We'll try to install a package. We'll try to see some running processes. Take a look and see if Top works and Telnet. And then we're going to also play around with SSH. Since we saw that it was upgrading the SSH package, can I use Bash on Ubuntu on Windows to now SSH into my Windows system from another computer? Spoiler alert, the answer is yes. And I can do it via using a password or doing passwordless authentication. And I'm going to show you how to configure both of those in this demo. Great, so this finished. I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen here. Now let's just double check the release version. And I do see that it is Ubuntu 14.04.5, and it is Trusty version. That's great. Well, let's see again if I have any. I still don't have anything in my root directory, but can I create a file? And now let's go ahead and do it. Oh, touch works. That's great. Let me go ahead and see if I can edit that file. Okay, Vim works. Let me go ahead and write a okay, we'll go ahead and save that. Now let's see if we can view it. Cat works, Vim works, touch works. That's pretty cool. Let's go ahead and check some other really helpful networking tools. Top works by default. That's also really interesting. Let's go ahead and do -a. You can see that's working. But I do notice that the processes that are running are just giving me a printout of Linux. If I go to my Windows Task Manager, I can actually see the processes running within Linux running under Windows. So first off, I see Bash right there, right off the bat. Go ahead and see if I see anything else. I'm not really running anything else.
The Windows subsystem for Linux is actually running out of your app data folder. So let me go ahead and shrink this window. And let's go ahead and go to local app data. And we're going to do LXSS for Linux subsystem. And we're going to do a backslash. Now I see here's Bash, which is running. The instance, and I'm actually going to restart the session in a second to show you one more thing. I also see that I have my home directory, my user account, and now I have that test file as well as the other hidden files there. That's pretty nice. If I go back under rootfs, I can actually see all of my normal root file systems that I would on a normal Linux system, and then under home, I would see my root account. If If I go back further under bin, I'm going to see all my binary tools that I have available. So I see a bunch is already installed and available for use. This is more than just a bash shell. This is a native Ubuntu binaries running on top of Windows, giving me access to a whole suite of Linux and bash tools. So if I go back one more time, I'm actually going to, and I have a temp folder, I have my mount folder, and if I go to mount, I can see the C drive, which doesn't show anything on the Windows side, but if I go to that directory again, over here, oops, and then do an ls, I see that I have access now to my C drive from my bash shell. I'm gonna go ahead and close this though, because I'm still running bash through command prompt, which is one way to do it. Another way, which is pretty just cool for the enthusiasts, is if you click the Windows button and type in bash after you've installed it, you now see that you have bash on Ubuntu on Windows with the Canonical logo. So I'm gonna go ahead and double click on that, or not even double click on that, single click on that. And now I'm taken into an actual bash shell where I can pin this. If I do right click, properties, I can see that this is pulling from bash exe in my system32 folder. And it's automatically going to my Linux home directory that's in app data. And this is just a shortcut, remember that. So I'm gonna go ahead and close this. We'll make this font a little bit bigger just for the purpose of the video. Okay, LS. So I still have that test file there, but let's see if I can actually make a file in my Windows documents folder from my Windows subsystem for Linux or my bash shell. So I'm going to cd over to mnt c drive, oops, users. I'm going to do an ls, see which user accounts I want to cd into my bash demo, and we'll cd into documents from there. So in here, I pretty much have a testwindows.txt file that I created earlier, and I have my hidden desktop INI. I want to see if I can actually, from my Linux side, view that testwindows file. So let's go ahead and see if we can cat that. I see that works pretty nicely. Let me go ahead and see if I can create one now. Looks like Vim works, so let's go ahead. This is a test from LXSS on Windows 10 Mac. Next to that. And I'm going to go ahead and save it. Now let's see if I can do an ls. Test linux.txt. Let's go ahead and cat that file. And I see that that shows up fine in bash. Now does it show up in Windows? So if I go here and I go to my documents folder, I see both files here, and if I open the test Linux folder that I, or the test Linux file that I created, I see that right there, and I can even go through and modify that here. This is a modification from Windows 10. Okay, I'm gonna save that, close. Now let's see what happens if I run the same command, and I see the additional text that I added on the Windows side. So I can seamlessly go back and forth. And again, this is cool from a very basic level, but now let's see if I can do things with SSH and be able to use it to access my Windows documents through an SSH session from another computer. So I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen here. I'm going to go back to my actual Linux home directory, where again, remember, there's not much there. I'm going to close out of this in the background, so we just kind of clean up the screen here. And I'm going to go ahead and cd to my SSH folder if one exists, and one does not exist. Okay, so we're gonna have to create one the same way that we would anything else. First thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go ahead and make modifications to my SSH config file and make sure that that still exists. We saw that OpenSSH was installed. So I'm gonna go ahead and do sudo vim etc ssh sshd config. I'm gonna go ahead and press enter. And I apologize for anybody viewing at home. I do know that the blue is a little bit hard to see, but we don't actually have to worry about the blue right now. We're just gonna change things in yellow and red. So I'm gonna go ahead and first change the port to 222. I'm also gonna go ahead and turn use privilege separation to no, because one thing to note is by default, the implementation of the Windows subsystem for Linux doesn't provide chroot. So we're going to go ahead and turn that to no, and we're going to make one more modification so that we can temporarily set up passwords so that we can ultimately then generate keys, copy them back and forth between two different systems, and then set up passwordless authentication. So I'm going to go ahead and allow password authentication. I'm going to press escape. I'm going to save that. Okay. And now I'm going to double check that there's a firewall rule in place. So click here, do firewall. We want to make sure we go into our advanced settings, which go. Okay, now I should have made the rule already, but this is something that you would have to do at home, and you could do that just by doing new rule, choose port, go next. For TCP port, you're going to specify the port 222 or whichever port you chose other than the default port. You press next from there. We'll go ahead and just type this just so you can see the screens. You go ahead and allow the connection. You choose which profiles you want it to apply on. I went ahead and allowed them on all of them. Press next, and then you just name it. So I'm not going to save that right now because I already did that and I named it SSH Bash, and we can go ahead and take a look at the properties of this. It's SSH Bash, allow the connection, it is enabled, protocols and ports, I am allowing traffic through TCP port 222. So I'm going to go ahead and close this and close that. Now I'm going to go ahead and set up the rest of the SSH configuration by doing sudo SSH keygen dash A, press enter. So it's going to generate new host keys. That's great. Now I'm going to go ahead and restart the service. Sudo service SSH restart. I can go ahead and ignore the upstart message. That's fine. Let's see if I can go ahead and test the connection locally. Can I connect from this instance to this particular session on the port I assign? So I can test that by doing SSH localhost dash P 222. We'll go ahead and do dash V. Just to also double check and press enter. We'll have a verbose mode enabled. So I can see, are you sure you want to continue connecting? It's going to add the fingerprint to my known host file. I'm going to say yes. Okay, it's prompting me for a password. I'm going to type in that super secret password I set for my user account. Press enter. And I see that it actually did log me in just fine from localhost. But will this work from another system? So let me go ahead and exit, clear the screen. We're going to go over to a Mac system that I have set up, and I'm going to go ahead and try to tunnel over from that. Use that. But I'm going to go ahead and click here in Terminal. And now we're going to go ahead and try to reconnect again. I'm sure I want to now add this new entry to my host file. I'm going to go ahead and type yes. It's asking me for the bash demo password for that Unix account that I created, again, for the bash instance running on Windows. So I'm going to go ahead and do my super secret password. Press enter. And I see that I'm logged in. Now, just to show you this without verbose mode, I'm going to go ahead and exit. I'm gonna clear the screen, go down, remove verbose mode, redo it. Now I'm just prompted with just the password again. Okay, so let's go ahead and do an ls. Ls, I see that test file that I created. Let's go ahead and view that and make sure it's the same file. This is awesome. Okay, now let's see if I go over to my mount volume, c users, bash demo. Enter. Okay, ls. I see I have all those folders that I saw earlier on the Windows side. I'm going to go ahead and cd into my documents folder and do an ls command. And I see that I have my test Linux and my test Windows. So let's go ahead and we'll cat the test Linux file. And I see I still have, this is a test from the Linux subsystem on Windows 10 mount. This is also a modification from Windows 10. So I'm in my computer. I can access from my Mac, I can access the files on my Windows side as well as on my Linux side through Bash running natively on Windows. Again, it's not running in Hyper-V. This is something that's installed directly using Ubuntu binaries distributed by Canonical running on top of Windows. Now, can I set up passwordless authentication so I don't have to type a password every single time? The answer to that is yes. So I'm going to go ahead and clear, cd back to this. And now I'm going to want to copy keys from my Mac so that I can be able to set up the authentication back and forth. And I do have instructions for this on my blog. I also have them right here so they can pop up on the screen. We're going to go ahead and we already did part of this. We already edited the SSH file. We already changed user privilege separation. We added a firewall rule and we generated host keys. But now we need to copy the files from the client side of the machine. So I'm going to scroll down just a little. And from my client machine, I'm going to start a new window here. I'm going to drag this over like this. Okay, so I'm going to minimize my SSH session temporarily. So from my client machine, I'm going to go ahead and CD into, and this is again, my client machine is my Mac. I'm no longer on the Bash instance or Windows or on the other system. I'm just on my MacBook Pro. So I'm going to go ahead and change directory to my SSH folder here. I'm going to go ahead and do an ls. I see that I have just my regular ID RSA keys and then a known host file, but I'm going to go ahead and generate a new key specifically for this particular connection. So I'm going to go ahead and do SSH key gen dash T RSA. What do I want to name the key? So I'm going to go ahead and call this bash demo. I'm going to go ahead and press enter. I'm not going to type a passphrase for right now, just for the purpose of the demo. And I'm not going to repeat that. So I see that I have a fingerprint now and it created the key. If I do an ls, I see now I have my private and public key pair. I'm going to go ahead and do clear. And now I'm also going to want to remember to do an SSH add that bash. If I do an l real quick, I can see that currently I don't have any identities in there. So I'm going to need to make sure I add that particular key in so that it'll work. So I'm going to go ahead and type bash demo. Now I've added that identity to my keychain on my client side, but now I need to add the key over onto the bash instance on Windows. So there are a few different ways to do that. I have ways currently up on my blog that is a series of multiple commands. I actually ended up writing a different command that will allow you to copy the public key through an SSH session. If you look right here in the background, it's the one that I've highlighted on number three. It's gonna take the contents of the bash demo public key. We're going to pipe that into an SSH session. Since we know SSH works, we specified again our user account name, the IP address, and the port. And then we're going to go ahead and make a directory. If one doesn't exist for SSH, we're going to go ahead and set the permissions of that. And then we're going to put the contents of that public key file also in our authorized keys. And then we're going to echo confirmation just so we know that worked. So I'm going to go ahead just and copy this one command. Go back over here. I'm going to go ahead and paste that right in. I'm going to press enter. I will have to enter a password. Press enter again. I see that the key copied. That was obviously what I told it to echo. So now if I clear, let's see what happens if I bring back this bash session. I'm going to go ahead and, well, first we can, since we're in here, we can go ahead and take a look and see that that key with the contents of that was copied. So I can go ahead and clear CD. We now know, remember, the SSH folder didn't exist. It obviously was created when we generated host keys. But if I go ahead and take a look at that, I see that I had the authorized keys file that was created and the known host. If I view, which we'll actually just use the view command, authorized keys, I see the key was properly copied. Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and clear. And now I am going to exit out of this session. Since the key copied, or before we exit actually, let's go ahead and edit and turn off password authentication because I'm still logged in. The session is still active. So I'm going to go ahead and sudo vim etc. Again, I'm modifying files right now. This particular session is I'm in bash demo at desktop pdk K5JK, that's the random name generated for the machine that I created for this demo. So I'm logged in again, to the Linux subsystem on Windows. And I'm going to go and edit the SSH configuration file that we edited in the beginning. And I'm going to turn off password authentication now, since we have keys generated back and forth. So I'm going to go ahead and do SSH, SSHD, config file. I'm going to press enter. Type in the password for that. Okay. This is a little easier to read now. Since I am doing it from my Mac, I have different profiles set up. So I'm going to do password. Oops. I'm going to actually redo this real quick. I hate when I accidentally start typing something. So we're just going to go down the list here. Password authentication. So I'm going to go right over. I'm going to go ahead and type no. Press escape. Save it. We're going to restart the service. Okay, and now I'm going to exit. So now I close that connection. I'm back over just on my MacBook Pro instance, but now I want to connect and see if I can connect without a password. So I'm just going to click up to type the same exact command I had typed before to tunnel in, which again is SSH bash demo, that's the user account, to the IP address and specify the port. I'm going to press enter and see that now I no longer have to enter a password. So it copied the key properly. Passwordless authentication works. Using a password works. That's pretty great as well. But let's see what else we can do with this. Can we run things like X11 apps? And I know one of my colleagues actually did a video where you can run X11 apps, and I'm just going to demo that really quickly. But there's also one really cool thing you can do where you can set it up and install additional files that weren't included in the Ubuntu package by default. And we're going to see if we can run Xubuntu desktop on there so that we can get also a graphical interface of our backend. So I'm going to switch back over now to the Windows side of things to go back and do a lot of these modifications again from bash on Windows and see what we can play with. Now let's see if we can go ahead and get an X11 server set up. There's two different programs you can use for X11 server. You can use Xming and you can use VNCSERV or VXCSERV. Let me make sure that I'm actually saying that right. VCXSERV, yes. I sometimes get letters confused. So I actually wrote a PowerShell script for this to make it a little bit easier, and I do have that available on GitHub. Let's see what happens if I actually type in git. Whoops. So git is not currently installed. I could do this one of two ways. One, I could do it where I'm going to git clone, install git and clone it into my Linux system, but I think I'm actually going to do it from my computer itself. Assuming that you already cloned this directory at the beginning of this video, you can go ahead and ignore this step. So I'm just going to clone https github.com/jld, and that's my repository. I'm going to do you don't have to remember the name of it. It is bashw10. I'm going to show you that script in a second. I'm going to go ahead and do git, press enter. It's going to clone that. While it's cloning that, we can go ahead and take a look at the script. So this is the script we're running, where I'm going to go ahead and first install Chocolaty, which is then going to allow me to pull commands later on to install either Xming or VCXSERV. And this is actually going to give you a menu where it's going to ask you which one you want to install. So this is the script we're going to run as soon as this finishes downloading. It should make it pretty seamless, because then once this gets installed, we can then go through and set up our X11 server and then run some X11 apps like Xeyes or Xclock, some Xcalculator. We can also take a look at a fun Telnet trick and then go through and show you installing the Xubuntu desktop. So I'm gonna minimize this. See that that's done. I'm gonna go ahead and see what's in this folder. I'm gonna change directories to it. I'm gonna go into the install folder. I see that the PowerShell script is in there. I'm going to go ahead and just run it. Press enter, and I see that it's starting the download. So it's going to go ahead and get everything for me. I'm not going to have to do anything. After this installs, it will ask me just to enter which X11 server I want to set up. Because I plan to also get Xubuntu desktop set up, I prefer to use VCXSERV. So I'm gonna go ahead and click V for that particular option. It's completely up to you. The default is Xming. It's gonna work the same way you're setting up an X11 server. So I'm gonna press enter. It's gonna go ahead and get that set up through Chocolaty. And this is the easiest way, rather than having to open up a web browser, go and search for it, make sure you click on the right link, go through the installer prompts. This is just doing it with one script. I'll go ahead and put, if you don't have the ability to run scripts on your system enabled, let's go ahead and bring up Notepad. Let me see if I can change the font real quick. We'll make this nice and big for you. And go ahead and type set execution policy unrestricted. You will have to do that from an administrator PowerShell prompt, and it'll make a registry modification, and then you should be able to go back and run the PowerShell script. Okay, so I see VCX Server has now been installed, and there is a shortcut to it on my desktop. So I'm going to go ahead and first hit X launch. I'm going to go ahead and allow full screen. What's next? Next. Finish. Okay. So I'm going to temporarily minimize that. That's normal. The black screen's normal. It's just a blank desktop now. So I'm going to go ahead and allow this to have access on all networks. Press allow access. Okay. So that part's now set up. Let me go ahead and clear out of this. Now we're going to want to also make some changes within our Bash system so that we can tell Bash to use that X11 server. So the first thing we're going to want to do, and again, I do have this in the documentation on my GitHub. The first thing we're going to want to do is go ahead and type echo export display equals colon zero. That's localhost to the zero display. And you can also see that right down here. So we see the 0.0. So this is going to be the same effect right here. I'm going to go ahead and hit another apostrophe to close that out. I'm going to tunnel that over into my Bash RC profile. And then I'm also going to restart my Bash RC profile. Okay. So now I'm also going to then make sure that I update the session from my Bash shell. So to do that, I'm going to go ahead and use sed. And this is another, again, great example of how many Bash tools are really available in Bash on Ubuntu on Windows. Use sed-i, $listen.star. $$. Host equals localhost, port 0. This again, remember, is just configuring the display section of it. After you get the setup, this is the one time that you have to do this as part of the configuration. Okay. Type BTC D dash one session.conf. That looks good. Sudo sed listening port. I'm going to press enter. Since I am using sudo, I do have to enter a password. Okay, so I see that that worked. Now I can go ahead and clear, and I now want to get and install X11 apps. So let me see, sudo apt-get install x11-apps. Okay, so that auto-completes. It found that package. So I'm going to go ahead and press enter. I'm going to agree that I want to install those packages. And while that installs, we're going to go ahead and take a look and see which apps we have available. So again, just to confirm, this is the Bash, GitHub repo that I have set up, with a PowerPoint deck and some demo content. I did this session at Silicon Valley Code Camp the other day. So this is the repository I used for that. I'm gonna go ahead and go here now to http packages.ubuntu.org /trusty, because again, we are using Trusty. It is Ubuntu 14.04, and I can show you that while that's actually installing. We'll go ahead and start a new instance. Now we're going to go ahead and do lsb release-a. I'm going to see that I am using Trusty 14.04.05 long-term service. So I'm going to go ahead and close out of this real quick. Trusty i386 /x11-apps file list. So this is a list of all the packages that are included in the X11 app. So I can run, I haven't tested all of these. I've tested Xcalc, I've tested Xclock, I've tested a few of these ones. And we can go ahead and see how these work around. But one of the cooler things is going to be to run Xubuntu Desktop. Okay, so now X11 Apps has finished installing. So we can go ahead and kind of see if we can get some of these X11 apps to run. Let's first go ahead and, I guess for the purpose of this demo, I'll actually go ahead and just return on the display. I temporarily disabled it, but I'll return it on to multiple windows just so we can see these things open in their own window. Actually, check. So now let's see what happens if we type X-Eyes. This is one of those apps. It's just some little googly eyes that'll follow your cursor around. And look at that. That works. Yay. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and move that right there. Okay. Let's go ahead and see if we can do X-Clock. I see a nice little clock popping up. Showing me the current time. Let's go ahead now and see Xcalc, maybe. And I see the calculator working. So we can go ahead and just do 8 + 8 = 16. Clock, or the calculator works. So this is, again, pretty neat that we know that we can do X11 apps, but we did know that. My colleague, Paul, actually had already demoed this. So one of the other things that I want to do now is see if I can get an entire Xubuntu desktop set up and configured. So to do that, we're going to have to run sudo apt-get install xorg and Xubuntu desktop. And then this is going to install a whole bunch of packages that were not previously included in just the very limited Ubuntu binaries that is distributed by Canonical to Microsoft by default, but we can go ahead and pull these and install them and then set it up to have, I guess, graphical interface with our desktop as well. Note that these packages, since they do have to download and then unpack, will take about 40 minutes. So I'll go ahead and pause the video while I get this set up, and then we'll see what this looks like. And that at the end of it, we'll go through and show one more thing on how you can use Bash in an integrated terminal in VS Code or Visual Studio Code, which is open source as well. And so if you're somebody that likes writing a lot of scripts because you're a systems administrator, or you're also a developer and you want to be able now to use your Bash terminal while you're writing scripts and test out certain things from within the application that you're using to write your scripts, I'll show you how to go ahead and modify that as well. So I'm going to go ahead and press enter. I'm going to type in my password for sudo. These are all the packages it's going to have to go through and install. Notice that it's also installing a bunch of X server stuff and XFCE. So we're going to actually need to remember that when we go to use the run command to get the session going. So in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and press Y. And I'm going to let these install. Actually, while this is installing, I thought of one more cool thing. I did mention earlier in the video that I was going to show you Telnet, and I did not actually demo that. So let's have a little bit of fun while we wait for this to install. And this trick was a pretty big hit at Silicon Valley Code Camp. This is an old trick. It will work outside of Bash. It'll work in Command Prompt and other command line tools. But let's go ahead and telnet towel.lincolnbytes.nl. And let's see what happens. So we see that telnet works. And for those of you who don't know, this is somebody actually had the time to rewrite Star Wars in ASCII, and so this is, you will actually be getting to watch Star Wars in ASCII format with text. It's pretty comical here. So you get to see the 20th century text. My favorite is when C-3PO and R2-D2 show up. This is episode 4. You see the text scrolling across the screen. What I am curious about is obviously somebody had the time to write this, but I'm curious if anybody has had the time to actually sit down and watch it solely just in text. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, probably prefer to watch it with actual characters, but I do like watching this and running this trick when I demonstrate Telnet. Let's see the star there. And there's C-3PO and R2-D2. So I'll go ahead and let this continue installing all those packages in the background, and I'll check back in with you shortly. Okay, so this is just finishing up the install here. Okay, so this is now finished installing. So I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen. Oops. Click on the right window. Clear the screen. We can see that we still have the XEyes running and the other X11 apps. Now I'm going to go ahead and see what happens if we type XFCE4 session. That's fine. Go ahead and ignore all of that text. We should end up seeing the Zubuntu desktop pop up here shortly. So I see that starting here. I'm going to go ahead and allow the default configuration. You know, actually, I'm not running full screen, so it's going to take a little bit longer to render than it might normally. But I can see that I now have a terminal emulator, and I can see that I even have some apps down here. Let's see what happens, though, actually. So this is the app running as part of Linux. I do not have Firefox installed on the system. I still see, obviously, my little X11 eyes. Remember, this is starting in individual windows because that's how we set up our X11 server. I'm going to go ahead and close this. Let's go ahead and restart our server. So if I exit this, I'm going to go ahead and click this. We're going to go ahead and restart it as full screen. Okay. And one thing I did want to show is here's some of the processes. If I restart Bash again, we could actually see apt-get, telnet, and a few other of the Bash processes that were running in the background running actually as Windows processes under task manager. So if I do like sudo apt-get update. And I'll see apt-get running as well as a background process. So that was one thing I just wanted to point out. I don't have to really do much with this. I'll let this finish real quick and then I'll clear. We did restart this process. So now I'm going to go ahead and clear and type XFCE4 session, press enter. And this should now actually start even with a Linux background or Ubuntu desktop background. It should be self-contained. Version of Zubuntu. And here we go. So I even have the applications menu. You can see some accessories. I can go into different things here. And again, load the web browser. And remember, this is not a virtual machine. All I did was install Xorg and Zubuntu desktop as a package. I can go ahead and we'll do a test here. And we'll just go ahead and double check that we can go to our favorite search engine, and then do test again. And I'm able to use the internet through Mozilla Firefox as part of Bash on Ubuntu on Windows 10 anniversary update. So I will have the information for this and how to set this up, all of my notes available on GitHub so that you can be able to test and play around with this. One more thing that I did promise you guys, let's go ahead and minimize this temporarily.
term?
Let's go ahead and get VS Code installed. And so to do that, you can again open your favorite browser. Don't have to worry about that. That is the link to my GitHub. But let's go ahead and search for Visual Studio Code, which again is open source and free. So this is the official site, is code.visualstudio.com. If I click right here, I can go in and download. So I'll just download it for Windows. It's going to download automatically. I'll go ahead and save it and then run the install. It runs very quickly. Okay, you can go ahead and agree to install an application. Simply press next, accept the agreement, next, next, and next. Okay, you can go ahead and minimize Internet Explorer here, or Edge. Now that this completed, I'm going to go ahead and press finish. It's going to launch Visual Studio Code. And one of the neat features about, let me go ahead and stop this from flashing here. One of the neat features about Visual Studio Code is that it has an integrated terminal built right into it where you can access, by default on Windows, you would access your command prompt. This is something that you can install on Mac and Linux. And by default, you would be using the terminal bash shell on both of those operating systems. So if I go ahead and hit control backtick here, it's going to bring up the terminal and I see that I have the option to use command prompt. But what happens if I'm a systems administrator and I'm trying to do shell scripting or I want to write a PowerShell script? You can actually change the terminal that your integrated shell is using. So if we go into preferences, hit user settings. These are the default settings on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, we actually have a settings.json file. So I'm going to go ahead and highlight this. I'm going to remove that, and I'm going to paste in something that, again, is available on my GitHub. I go ahead and paste this in, and you'll notice that I have a few things commented out. The first one is command. The second one is PowerShell 64. And the third one is bash. So let me go ahead and just move this around real quick. Bring these up to where there aren't spaces in between that just to make it look right. Go ahead and save that and then restart Visual Studio Code. And if I do control backtick now, I see that I actually have my PowerShell instance. Let's go ahead and modify that one more time, user settings. And I can go ahead and comment out these two lines of code. I'm just going to do the control forward slash to comment out both lines. And then I'm going to hit the same keys and highlight the ones under bash. And then I'm going to save. Hit the plus sign down here. And this now actually brought up to where I'm now immediately in my bash shell. So I can change directory over to my Linux home folder. And if I do an ls, I see the test file that I created earlier, as well as the desktop folder that's a part of my Linux desktop. So that's kind of it for the demo. This is getting started on Bash on Windows. It's definitely something that's just another tool in your toolbox, and it's something that can add a lot of power to your resources. So you don't have to go out and install third-party programs now to be able to use Linux tools that you formerly used to want to install other applications for. And now it even gives you the ability to, if you wanted to, SSH into your system. One thing to note is you do have to have that bash instance up and running, not for this particular one, because again, this one is for the Zubuntu desktop here, but you do have to have a bash instance with SSH running because it is running as a Windows process. You could, in theory, set that up as a scheduled task. I haven't tried that yet, but if you want to try that out and let me know, that'd be great. All right, thank you for watching. If you have any questions, feel free to email me, send a comment, hit up my blog. I'd love to talk with you.